Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We're going to start out talking about the government shutdown. Republicans are proposing to extend current funding through November the 21st. Democrats' counter proposal is that they would extend funding through October 31st with concessions of $1 trillion for Medicaid by reversing cuts from the GOP tax and spending bill, as well as a permanent extension of subsidies for people receiving health care on the Affordable Care Act. Now, leaders of both parties are supposed to be meeting with President Trump this afternoon. And in the meantime, a coalition of federal unions are calling on Democratic leadership to fight back, said, shut the government down. We'll go without the pay cuts because of what we see as cuts to a whole host of benefits, none of which has actually been proposed. So it's kind of interesting. Joining us, Guy Williams, President, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much.
The left hand doesn't seem to know what the right hand's doing here yet again. I mean, it's kind of interesting. Your thoughts?
It really is. And if you look at both sides, I want to just talk about the dynamics of what's pushing this shutdown. On TMAR, President Trump is thinking, I have wanted to eliminate a certain number of federal programs, and if the government is shut down, then instead of furloughing employees, I can fire them. So the thought is, don't do the furloughs, fire people in all the agencies that I don't like education, et cetera, just take your pick. And use this opportunity to reduce the federal workforce, which is still bigger than it was, you know, when Trump was president last time. So his thought is this will be a great opportunity. In 2019, a law was passed, the Furlough Act, that said that if there's a government shutdown, furloughed employees are paid back time. So you have effectively time off and then you get paid. So his thought that he's expressed is this will be a chance to fire people. Team D is much more complex. And the challenge is Schumer is an institutionalist, and his belief is that the government can solve many problems. And he is, just by nature and temperament, wants to keep the government open because he believes it is the solution to problems. On Team R, there's a belief that smaller government, less government is better. So you have a pro-government wanting it to be bigger and more intrusive into the economy, a small government faction saying, you know, there are a lot of things government does that they don't need to do. So those pressures are going on. Schumer, as I say, would like to keep the government open, but he is being pressed hard by the progressive wing of his party. And usually you insult members of the other party, but what he's been called is a betrayer, a spineless, a cave-in person, and the left has said, we don't want you to betray us again, don't cave in again, you know, grow up, show a spine, be tough, stand up. And it's complicated because he's from New York, as you know. Well, in New York, the progressive wing of the party is pushing further left than the rest of the country. Probably Mondami is going to win in the New York mayor's race. AOC has said she's going to challenge Schumer in the primaries. And so he's looking both at his own political future, his predisposition to want the government to stay open, and then his, you know, his desire to, you know, not be insulted by the progressive left. So he's in a very difficult situation. President's somewhat less difficult because he seems to be immune to name calling. So we're at this point that if something isn't done by tomorrow at midnight, then the government will shut down, which doesn't mean what you actually think it does. So it's much more complicated than, the government will stop running, because the government won't stop running at midnight Tuesday.
But, Guy, how serious are you about negotiation when one of the things you're putting on a table is the permanent extension of subsidies under the Affordable Care Act? When that act and those subsidies, we know in many states across this country, are wreaking havoc financially on many different fronts, and it's not the cheapest alternative as it relates to health insurance in some states as well.
Yeah, the challenge, once again, politically, if you want to shut down, you have to have something that's worth fighting for. So in the behind-the-scenes caucus meetings, the question was, well, what do we want to say is worth fighting for? And the one that it could have been climate, it could have been, federal regulation, could have been immigration, could have been tariffs. But the one that they thought would resonate is health care. Now, healthcare is very complex, and really, there's so much room for improvement. We spend more than any other civilized country on healthcare for worse outcomes, and there are a lot of opportunities to cut cost. One of the things that I think is challenging, they're talking about the cuts to Medicare, Medicaid. They haven't occurred yet. They're not actually cuts in benefits. The Medicare, Medicaid budgets will actually go up over the next 2 years, but they're work requirements, very similar to what Bill Clinton put in. So you have some either work requirements, some community service requirements. These are things that are changes, but they're being called cuts. And the projections by some people on the left are, well, nobody will work, nobody will do any of the study or community obligations. So what will happen is they just won't have health insurance. And I think that's an unrealistic assessment. And I'm not sure that it's going to resonate, because that's part of the challenge. Now, the other thing is, if you're looking for permanent enshrinement of the subsidies, then you're going to have a hard time getting the Republican majority to vote yes, because the deficit is still big, and it got a little bigger this year than last year. The projections are not good, so conservative Republicans are unlikely to permanently enshrine the Obamacare subsidies that occurred last year. And these were supposed to be temporary COVID subsidies, so making them permanent is probably a non-starter. But it's a position to negotiate from. And I think Chuck Schumer is in a very difficult situation, because he's being pushed very hard by his base that he has to show a spine, he has to be tough, he has to, do something. It also gets complicated because Hakeem Jeffries has insulted the head of OMB and called him a malignant political hack. So unlikely that Russell Vaught, who actually supervises the way money's spent, is feeling very good about working with Team D at the moment. But the base is asking these guys to fight. I mean, the base is upset that they're not publicly fighting more with the administration. So then you start looking, okay, well, if this shutdown occurs, what does it actually mean?
Yeah, it just seems that, and as you pointed out, they've got folks believing that there are cuts to these programs, right? And that's not actually the case. And the union's actually putting in there that there's cuts to Social Security that they want to preserve. Well, that's not the case either. So you got all the traditional talking points to try and rally the base. into believing that these things are imminent, and they're not. In fact, you and I have talked about this a dozen times. There needs to be work on some of these programs, but there haven't really been any meaningful amount of work, right?
Correct. And, I mean, we know that Social Security, the trust fund, will run out of money. It'll run out of money, and at that moment, benefits will be reduced 23% to 24%. But that happens regardless. This government shutdown has nothing to do with that. Current Social Security payments will be paid even if there is a shutdown, as will VA payments, as will Medicare, Medicaid, as will the Postal Service, as will federal retirement. So all those things will continue. And I think it does hurt your case when you argue things that aren't really quite accurate. But I think we've gotten into such an excited media environment that, you know, you come up with whatever the most inflammatory thing is, regardless of which side you are on the issue.
I was watching on Instagram the other day the replay, and I don't know when it first was played, but Abby Phillips was having her roundtable discussion with Republicans and Democrats, and they were talking about Social Security. And she says, well, that's the people's money. And I think it was Ben Shapiro said, well, no, you pay in X, but you take out X times something. It's not just what you put in is not what you're entitled to. And I'm watching this unfold, and I'm like, now this is a person that covers government all the time, and people still don't realize how Social Security works, that you're getting out more than you're putting in, if you stay alive, that is, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't take many years to get to the amount that you put in that you're taking out while on Social Security. If you would, just for a few minutes, cover this again for folks as to how this Social Security system works, please.
Yeah, Social Security occurred back in the Roosevelt administration, and the idea, and at that time, retirees and elderly really did have relatively lower standard of living than the rest of America. You know, if you didn't have a retirement plan, you could really be in desperate poverty. So as part of Roosevelt's plan, he said, I'm going to create Social Security. But the plan was never designed to be completely self-funding if the population changed. And what I mean by that is, when he set the plan up, you had a significant number of workers for every retiree. So more money was going in, and the retirees were taking money out. Now, the retirees, particularly the early ones, had put in essentially nothing and were getting out a very nice benefit. Today's retirees have put in some money, a significant amount of money, but they're getting an inflation-indexed retirement plan at a discount. You couldn't take your money and get that same retirement plan based on what you put in. So you're getting this benefit. You're getting an inflation-indexed guaranteed benefit because of the design of the system. But where it breaks down is when you have fewer workers compared to retirees. And what's happening in America is, as we age, we're having more retirees, fewer workers, and that challenges the structure of the system. Now, it's interesting, back in the Bush administration, he proposed, well, what if we put the worker contribution, the employer contribution, into an index fund, an S&P index fund, and just let it grow? And it, depending on the time that you do it, that can actually be a good idea. If we'd done it when President Bush was suggesting it, Social Security would actually be in great shape right now. Now, you know, once again, there are periods when the S&P index doesn't grow, but that was called privatizing Social Security. People didn't want to do it, and there was a lot of resistance. But in a nutshell, people are getting a very nice retirement. They're paying a discounted price compared to what it would cost on the open market to buy it. It's supported by the current workers. But if the demographics in America don't change, if we don't have more workers relative to retirees, we will have to adjust Social Security, either by raising retirement age, raising contributions or reducing benefits.
Right. And what we're doing is we're basically borrowing money to keep it afloat, right?
We are. And, well, we're not borrowing money. We're taking out of what, you know, the trust fund was the accumulation of contributions. In the early years, once again, going back to the Roosevelt days, when you had a significant, significant number of retirees, when people didn't live very long after retirement, you had a lot of money flowing into the system and very little flowing out. So that built up a surplus that's been eroded through the years. And as I say, in the next few years, about between five and a half and six, that surplus will be gone. Then it'll be pay as you go, unless the government supplements it somehow.
Right. So the unfunded accrued liability number that's floating out there is getting larger and larger as each year goes by. And at some point there's a day of reckoning.
Yeah, if the government had to do pensions the way private industry did, you have to figure out what the future value of your pension payments is and then make a contribution if you have an underfunded pension plan. We don't have that accounting on the federal government, but we have for state governments. They do. We do look at how unfunded the pension plan is. And you have states like Illinois that have grossly unfunded pension plans, and you know there's a future problem looming. For the federal government, we don't have the total numbers. But we also realize that both parties are going to work to find some sort of solution. But it's not in this term. It's not in this congressional term. It's not in this presidential term. And the nature of Congress is to not do something until they really are forced to by circumstances. So there's not a consensus to make any changes right now.
What are you hearing from D.C. as to the odds of working this out? Or do you kind of believe we're headed to a shutdown?
I think the odds are strong, probably 90-10 shutdown. And the reason is Schumer, who is an institutionalist and would prefer to keep the government open, is being pressed so hard by the left that it is going to be very difficult for him to not allow a shutdown to occur. The other thing that is really a challenge is he knows that if a shutdown occurs, it may give the president the opportunity to make cuts that he wouldn't have an opportunity to do otherwise. So his calculus mentally, if it were just him voting, is let's not do this. Let's live to fight another day. Midterms are coming. We'll go through that. But the progressive wing of the party is pushing so hard that it's going to be very tough. The other challenge is the administration gets to be incredibly flexible in how they determine an essential worker. I happened to be in Washington last time there was a shutdown, and literally, the World War II monument, which is basically an outdoor monument that you can walk through, they had posted guards so that you couldn't walk through it. And I thought to myself, this is actually costing money to close the World War II monument. Just leaving it alone would have been fine. Let the D.C. police be police, let people walk through it like they normally did. But the idea was to inflict pain upon tourists, make people mad. So the question is, with national parks, do you close the national parks or do you just say, look, here's a park. It's in Arizona. It's in Colorado. State police, y'all get to patrol it, and it's open. We may not be running the park concessions, but, you know, the Grand Canyon's still the Grand Canyon. Go look at it. And it's going to be a determination. In this case, the administration will make it. Will it make people more likely to support Team R or more likely to support Team D if they close the park, if they literally post guards at the entrance? And I don't know what the game plan is. I know both sides are working very hard to position that the shutdown is the other side's fault. So I think once you realize which way people are leaning, then the administration will make a decision on how they want to operate during the shutdown. Conceivably, yeah, they could operate in a way that would be almost invisible to the average American. And if that's the case, it would be, you know, in their interest to just hold pat, because at that point they have a pretty strong hand. Now, If they shut things down that really aggravate the average American and they start losing popularity, then you risk losing at the next midterm. So that's going to be the calculus. But right now, I think Team D is pushed so hard by the left wing to fight, to be tough, to show some gumption, that it would be very difficult for them to compromise. And I don't think that the permanent extension of Obamacare would get through the Republican House. The House is not meeting today and tomorrow, by the way. So Mike Johnson
is taking this opportunity, right?
Say, I'll take a few days off.
Yeah. It will be interesting. We'll be right back. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trusts. When we return, we'll talk about AI and energy prices. Stay with us.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Guy, on the text line, folks are asking, can you opine on the impact of tariff revenue impacting shutdown decisions?
Really, the tariff revenue doesn't really affect the shutdown decision because government revenue continues, whether it's tariff revenue or other revenue. So it's really not related to the shutdown decision. The shutdown decision is more political. The tariff revenue is going to affect the projections for next year as we get into the budget cycle for the next fiscal year. And there's a big challenge because a lot of conservative Republicans want to see the trend in the deficit go down. And most economists would say, look, in the long run, we've got to do it. We've got to find some way to push that trend line back down. We can't keep increasing the deficit year over year. But it's not directly related to the shutdown decision.
But most recent comments by the Fed has been that the economy has not seen the inflationary pressure that they expected to see as a result of the tariffs. And meanwhile, we're banking a boatload of money.
Yeah, the Fed has a couple of statements on that. One is, it may be that the tariffs are a one-time blip. So you had zero tariff before, now you have 10, 15, 20, whatever number there is. So prices go up once, but from now on, that's just baked in. It's not an additional 20 every year. It's the same blip. So if there's a one-time blip in inflation, that creates one solution. Now, if the tariffs are a permanent increase in inflation, if manufacturers overseas keep increasing their prices to get back to their profit margin, then that causes a different Fed response, which would be higher interest rates, not lower. If it's a one-time blip, you actually might want to do lower rates to keep the economy going because it's just an external shock.
Yeah. For certain. Guy, let's pivot. Let's talk about AI and energy prices. What is the relation?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting. We don't often step back and look at the big picture, but between 2005 and 2020, electricity demand went up only 0.1%. So the U.S. became more efficient, you know, appliances were more efficient, houses are better insulated. So we had basically a 15-year period where we didn't have to worry about adding capacity because things were working well, demand was not going up. But what happened is starting in 2020 and going forward, you introduce AI. And AI means artificial intelligence. It's run by big, big data centers. And we have one going into North Louisiana that's so large that Energy is actually building three gas-fired plants to provide the electricity that's needed. So AI has gone from essentially 0 to 4% of electric consumption in 2003, which is the last year we have good numbers, projected to go up to as much as 8 to 12 in the next 3 years. So suddenly we have a big demand for electricity. And this is a challenge for a bunch of reasons, because it is not easy or quick to approve a new source of power. And in fact, we'd been going the other direction. We've been gradually closing coal-fired plants, you know, gradually introducing intermittent sources of power, the electric solar panels, as well as the wind panels. But the missing element, and this was missed all through every administration in the last, you know, 20 years, is we did not connect the grid nationally. So there are times when we might have excess power, but it can't be delivered to the places that it's needed. So we have demand going up. And if you're in an area that is constrained on external supply, a classic example would be New Jersey. You know, they chose not to do a pipeline to get cheap natural gas from Pennsylvania. They chose not to approve new natural gas power plants. They chose instead to go with offshore wind, which has been slow to come online, temporarily halted by the government, now back on track. But the result is their power prices have gone up significantly compared to the rest of the country, so much so that their rates went up 22% this summer, because the way it works is when your local utilities can't generate enough power, they go to an auction, and power plants that can feed into the grid bid. And if there's a real tight supply, the bids can get pretty high. So New Jersey faced significant price increases, and you can imagine how voters felt when suddenly you're facing a 22% higher bill. So what's happening is AI is locating where power is inexpensive, but if they use up the power, it can't feed into these areas where there are shortages. So that reserve capacity, that shock absorber, is being used up as AI locates. And you have significant AI concentrations in Virginia, in Louisiana now, in Texas. And it's taking excess power off the grid that could be used to fill in. And the one thing about AI that's different from a manufacturing plant or some other users, you cannot shut down a data center. You know, they have contracts that say, look, this power has to continue. We have to run these servers 24/7. There can be no interruption. Some people that are like aluminum smelters will make a deal with the utility and say, look, if you have tremendous needs, you can give us notice and we'll go offline. AI centers are the opposite. You can have all the need in the world, but we cannot go offline. We're like hospitals. We have to stay up. So this is pushing prices. And as we see AI demand going up, grid is not keeping up, and new sources of power are not keeping up. So it's going to push prices higher as the shock absorber load gets taken and used up.
So when we look at the project that we have here in Louisiana, I mean, they've taken that consequence into account. They're building the three plants, and I think Meta's putting up a good portion of money to actually build two, if not all three of those, right?
Yeah, the Louisiana plan should be rate neutral. And, you know, Louisiana was chosen for a number of reasons. One is, depending on how you look at it, we're either the best or in the top 10 in terms of price and availability. So it's one of our strengths as a state that we have available power. And that's because we've stuck with nuclear and natural gas. So we have we have dependable power, relatively inexpensive. Gas prices have been going down, so that makes the gas-powered plants even more efficient. But the deal with Meta is they would not be taking power from the grid. These plants will supply their needs, so it's not going to be a net negative to the grid. The only danger is the contracts run, and the number may be 15 years, it may be 20, but at that point, Meta won't have a further obligation. So hopefully energy will depreciate them over that time, because at the end of that time period, Meta may or may not continue to need the power. You know, it could be that there's a new technology that makes data centers significantly more expensive or even obsolete. But in the short run, at least for a decade, this will have no effect on the consumer in Louisiana.
Let's pivot once again. This topic really surprises me. The state of California looks to increase oil drilling.
Yeah, who knew? I mean, could you imagine?
Just
after
knocked me off my feet.
Carbon neutral. This is an existential crisis. This is the worst thing that's faced America since the Great Depression. It's a fossil fuel dilemma. We have to go to zero and net neutral in California. I think a couple of things are going on. In fact, I know a couple of things are going on. One is California residents don't like paying the highest price in America for gasoline. Two, Gavin Newsom is running for president. So he does not want to be shackled with, I'm the one who pushed prices up super high in California, because whoever's running against Gavin Newsom will say, you don't want him doing that to the rest of the country, do you? And so now there's an area in California, actually several, with good prospects for oil. California used to be a big oil producer. That's why Chevron was headquartered out in California, because it was a very productive area. They have oil fields. And so now they've said, we're going to expedite permitting, and we're going to allow 2,000 new wells. Now, I talked to some of my friends in the oil business over the weekend, and they said, that's a great start, but it doesn't go anywhere near far enough. There are a lot of other obstacles in California. But it does show that California is looking at the reasons that they have had this high oil prices. And the other thing is, some people are actually looking and saying, okay, so what is the consequence of what we've done? One of the consequences is California used to refine their own oil. You know, drilled the oil in California, refined it in California, used it in California. Because they weren't issuing new permits, California no longer produces enough oil to supply their own needs. And because they didn't build pipelines to Texas and Louisiana, they have to import the oil by tanker. So it's actually more dangerous to the environment, more CO2 emitted because of the decisions they made. If they'd had a pipeline, pipelines are by far the most efficient way to deliver oil, but they don't have the pipeline connections to the oil fields. So they're literally buying oil overseas, shipping it in by tanker, and polluting the environment more because of the decisions they've made. So I think there's a bit of rationality coming into play. There's a political calculus, because Governor Newsom does want to run for president, hopes that he'll win, and he realizes, I can't be running on this totally high-priced oil and gas and high-priced gasoline ticket.
Yeah. Got to get to a break. We're visiting with Guy Williams, president of Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. When we return, we'll talk about Gen Zers, credit scores dropping, and why. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are visiting with Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. Gen Zers, those are the folks that are born between 1997 and 2012. Their credit scores are dropping. What's going on there, Guy?
Yeah, Credit Bureau just released their latest report on credit scores. The national credit score, the median score that divides top to bottom, is now 715. It used to be 717, so a little bit of a drop for everybody. But the big news was Gen Z dropped to 676. So a big negative shift. And this is really unfortunate because, as we've talked about before, your credit score determines what sort of offers you receive. So when credit card companies make offers, the best offer, the lowest prices, the best terms, highest availability go to people with the highest credit scores. As your credit score goes down, your interest rate goes up. Same thing with mortgages. Same thing with apartments that use credit scores to weed out tenants. In some cases, at a low credit score, you just get denied. You don't even have an opportunity. The other thing is you miss opportunities that insurance companies may have. Auto insurers also use credit scores. And what we're seeing is this generation grew up and had a real tough time because you had the pandemic, and during the pandemic, they learned some bad habits. It's not their own fault. It's just we all live in the environment we're in. But what happened to them is everything seemed to be free. You know, your student loan was deferred. You could still borrow money on the student loan program to spend on anything you wanted, which was really unfortunate. I wish the government hadn't promoted it that way. Because they'd say, look, you can use this money for anything. This is the amount you're eligible for, and there are no payments. So Gen Z developed a habit of borrowing money, not repaying it because there were no payments due. And now, gone from about 30% of Gen Zers had a credit card to 84% today. And the challenge is, when the student loans kicked back in, maybe a third to 40% of the people with student loans didn't graduate from college. So they didn't really get the benefit of that loan, but they still had the debt. And that debt started being reported to the credit bureau. Credit cards, relatively easy to get, those are being reported to the credit bureau. And then the other thing is the buy now, pay later. And once again, you grow up in an era where you borrow money, you don't have to make payments. It seemed like a great thing. Gen Z uses buy now, pay later more than they use credit cards. And the challenge is, depending on the provider of the buy now, pay later loan, first, if you don't make your payments, the interest rate shoots up into the high 30s, plus late fees. They're not regulated like credit cards are, like bank loans are. So you don't have disclosures of the actual cost. And as you miss those payments, it destroys your credit score. Now, some buy now, pay later companies don't report to the credit bureau, but many do. So you have a combination of bad credit habits learned because of the environment, and then just an acceptance of the convenience of buy now, pay later, which is really hurting the financial wherewithal for this group.
Yeah, no doubt. And then it's even beyond now the Gen Zers, right? Because there are credit card debt is higher than it's been in a long, long time, and it continues to grow, and that's not a good indicator either. As always, we truly appreciate your time spent with us. Thank you so much for joining us, and have a great week.
Oh, you're very welcome. You too.
Thank you, sir. That's Guy Williams, president, Gulf Coast Bank and Trust. We'll be right back. Check in with Scoot when we return. Stay with us. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, we'll talk about the Saints and LSU. We'll talk about a rowdy crowd at the Ryder Cup. And I know you're going to want to call in when we talk about Bad Bunny being selected as a halftime show for the Super Bowl next year.
All righty, Scoot's headed your way. Stay tuned, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Monday evening. We'll see you in the morning.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.